Okay, we're starting a new series, and we have about, I think, 6 weeks until the beginning of Lent, so it'll be a somewhat short series. I think Lent is a little on the early side this year, although I'm not sure. Easter's at the end of March, which seems early. And this series is going to be about story, which at first glance, some of you say, okay, how is this all going to work? Just give it some time. I'm really excited about it. I think it has a huge impact on how we live, on our perspective on the Bible, on everything. So bear with me. And I want to start by showing you a present that my daughter got for Christmas. It's called the Amazing Story Generator. And what you do is you open it up. I'm going to do it right now. And it's got three little tabs. And it says, you just kind of open it up. And we say, while dog sitting, a Nobel Prize-winning physicist challenges a rival to a duel. Okay, so that's the story. So as a family, I think it was a little after Christmas, we had this thing where we would turn this page. You had to just come up with a random, the night before the wedding, an avid comic book collector slowly transforms into a centaur. That one's pretty good, actually. That would actually work, for real. I mean, he likes comic books. So our family had to go through and elaborate and fill in all the details of the story. So we had to go around the room and say, well, there was this guy, Jim, and he was really excited to get married, and you know, you get the idea. Just one more, because it is fun. After a failed bank heist, a gossip columnist burns down a house. Okay? So you get this thing, and it's kind of cheesy, and yet there's these pieces of it where you go, oh, man, that would actually make sense. I could start to see where some of that story could fill in. It's got some pieces of something that make a good story, which makes you ask questions like, what does make a good story? So I'm going to throw out a lot of ingredients in this soup, and we're going to stir them all together, and then hopefully by the end we'll get something for the introduction to this series that you can think about, and that matters a little bit. So first ingredient is this: I have a story to tell you. For Christmas, I got a drone. Not a super fancy, nice one, but it does the job for me. I've flown it every day since I got it. My family makes fun of me because I'm always into it, and I make excuses like, oh my gosh, it's beautiful outside. I should go take some pictures with the drone, which is an excuse for me to just fly it. I got a lot of batteries for it, so it always has juice now. I'm not waiting for it to charge. It's amazing. So one evening, we were all going to go to a movie. It was dark. I'm like, oh, I haven't flown the drone at night. Let's go. So I like race out before the movie, and I'm in my driveway, and it's just like, it's way higher than I thought. I mean, this thing's a little cheap drone, but it's way up there. And the lights are blinking, and then, you know, what happens? It reaches its max, and I'm starting to get nervous. Oh, gosh. Then it's into the neighbors. Then it's into his trees, and then it battery dies, and it just falls. And I have no idea where. So I'm hiking through the snow, through my neighbor's woods, through my neighbor's house, and I'm like, zzz, zzz. I'm like, I can hear it, zzz, zzz, following it. Zzz, zzz, zzz. It's on his roof. I'm like, all right, well, I guess I'll just leave. I don't know what to do. The family, we got to go, but I can't leave it here. What's going to happen? Okay, I got to go to it. Okay, here we go. I'm going to go up to his door. And then I'm like, I'm going to blame the kids. One of my kids was flying the drone, and this is what happens when you let kids take your presents. Stupid kids. And I'm like, no, Ryan, you got to own it. Just own it. So his daughter answers the door. I'm like, hi, I have a drone I got for Christmas. It's on your roof. She looks at me like really weird. Dad, he comes up. Oh, it's all right. It's all right. What's up? I'm like, well, I'm your neighbor. I flew. Okay, long story short, he gets a ladder out. I look at his Jeep, which I've always lusted after because it's really nice. I'm like, your Jeep makes mine look like garbage, by the way. That thing's awesome. Well, let me tell you some stories. We talk. He gets a ladder. I climb up on his roof. I rescue the drone. Turns out it's my neighbor I've never met. I should have met him months ago when he moved in. I'm a terrible neighbor, terrible Christian, terrible pastor. But we hung out, we got to know each other, we're going to hang out soon, and I returned home with my drone and having met my amazing neighbor with the nice Jeep. And then we were on time for the movie, everything worked out fine. So that's the story, that's it. You say, is it a good story? I don't know, Maybe. It's got some components of a story. So you go, let's talk about it. What makes a good story? Robert McKee has a book called Story. It's probably the most well-known book on story, thus the name Story. It's taught in classes all over. I've read it. It's huge. I didn't understand most of it, but in an interview, he was asked for a summation of his book in which he said, how can I sum up my book? That's why it's so big, but I'll try. Here's a summary of Story. Story begins when an event, either by human decision or accident in the universe, radically upsets the balance of forces in the protagonist's life, arousing in that character the need to restore the balance of life. To do so, that character will conceive of what is known as an object of desire. That which they feel they need to put life back into balance. They will then go off into their world, into themselves, in the various dimensions of their existence, seeking that object of desire, trying to restore the balance of life, and they will struggle against forces of antagonism that will come from their own inner natures as human beings, their relationships with other human beings, their personal and or social life, and the physical environment itself. They may or may not achieve that object of desire. They may or may not finally be able to restore their life to a satisfying balance. And that, in the simplest possible way, okay, defines the elements of story. An event that throws life out of balance. The need and desire to restore the balance, and the object of desire the character conceives of consciously or unconsciously that they can pursue against the forces of antagonism from all the levels of their life that they may or may not achieve. So, basically, antagonist or protagonist, something throws life out of whack. There is something that can return life, and the protagonist fights to return life back, right? Makes sense, kind of. Okay, that is most stories. That seems to be the way they work. Okay, here's another little ingredient. If you take something that happened, something that disturbs you or did disturb you once, I say this advisedly because the fact that you are disturbed means that the episode is vibrant, has feeling. You are likely to approach it with emotion, which is a heightened form of interest. This is Samson Raphaelson. It's an old book on screenwriting. This thing was written in the 50s, and it's basically him talking to his class. And in this portion, he's saying something that if something ever disturbed you in your life, if something ever made you upset, take that. That's good. That's a good thing when you're disturbed or when there was a hard piece of life, because that will make a good story. So again, we start to see this trend of things are normal, things become not normal through something bad, and then we have to return things to normal, and that has the making of a good story. Okay, another ingredient. This is Ken Burns, filmmaker, story guru, gave a great commencement speech. He said this, "What makes a great story is when 1 + 1 = 3. The whole is greater than the sum of its parts. We all know 1 + 1 = 2, and that's not a good story. 1 + 1 = 2 is not a good story. That is, I was born into a very rich family. My dad invested millions into my business. It's a successful business, and now I make millions. That's cool. That's a great story. 1 + 1 = 2. 1 + 1 = 3, yeah, I was born in a very poor family, fought my way, struggled. My parents left me when I was a child. I was on the streets, and I did this, and I met this guy, and I found this guy. Now I have a, what? Whoa. And again, you start to see a theme, some rough patches, something to throw off the balance, and there's this greater thing to the story. It's not just 1 + 1 = 2. It's 1 + 1 =, whoa, there's other elements here. There's other stuff happening. I'm intrigued in this story. Okay? Another ingredient. Richard Beck, talking about the prophets, which we just studied last fall. When you look at the poetry of the prophets, you see three different sorts of poetry, each with a different emotional tone. The prophets sing three different songs. The first song is prophetic rage and indignation. The second song is grief and lamentation, an expression of sorrow in the face of suffering and loss. The third song is a song of hope. This is the prophetic turn we see in Isaiah 40, where after all the anger and sorrow, a song of hope breaks out. And he calls this reality, grief, and hope, taken from Walter Brueggemann, who's talked a lot about the prophets. But at the end of the day, you start to see again this idea of a pattern, reality, the way things are, grief. Something has made reality worse, and hope. Something will return reality to a better place. So we're starting to see again this idea of these pieces of a story, even throughout the prophets. These same pieces, okay? Another ingredient, this is Seth Godin, who I've quoted often. You've heard about the dip if you've been here for a while. Almost everything in life worth doing is controlled by the dip. Now we're not necessarily talking about a story, we're talking about real life. At the beginning, when you first start something, it's fun. You could be taking up golf or acupuncture or piloting a plane or doing chemistry, doesn't matter. It's interesting and you get plenty of good feedback from the people around you, and we can all relate to this. Over the next few days and weeks, the rapid learning you experience keeps you going. Whatever your new thing is, it's easy to stay engaged in it. And then the dip happens. The dip is the long slog between starting and mastery. That's a great line. The dip is the long slog between starting and mastery. A long slog that's actually a shortcut because it gets you where you want to go faster than any other path. So now we're not just talking about stories, we're talking about life, according to Godin, and we still have these themes of reality, the way things are, trying to get to somewhere different or better or hope or the object of desire to get to a better reality, and there's still this slog, this negative pain, disturbance thing in the middle that actually, according to Godin, gets us there faster. So now there's a story and maybe a lot of our life as a story. And this next one, this is Neil Gaiman, an author, really good author, talks a lot about stories. Little line from an interview, pictures I think may have been a way of transmitting stories. The drawings on cave walls that we assume are acts of worship or of sympathetic magic intended to bring hunters luck and good kills, I keep wondering if, actually, they're just ways of telling stories. We came over that bridge and we saw a herd of woolly bisons. And I wonder that because people tell stories. It's an enormous part of what makes us human. We will do an awful lot for stories. We will endure an awful lot for stories. And stories, in their turn, like some kind of symbiote, help us endure and make sense of our lives. So we give to stories, stories give to us. So you start to get this pattern of, wow, maybe there's more to stories than just a story. Stories are giving us something. So we create stories, they give us something. Then you start getting into neuroscience and pieces of the brain, parts of the brain that are activated when we hear stories. So I can talk about words, I can talk about drones, I can talk about what drones do. When I tell you a story, not only are the language components of your brain activated, but other parts of your brain are activated. If I tell you a story about me running, the parts of your brain that control you running are actually activated. We've seen this. And so in a sense, stories begin to activate our entire brain. And we start to think differently with stories. Not only that, but as I tell you a story and parts of my brain are activated, the same parts of your brain are activated. And so there's this huge synchronicity between the storyteller and the audience. People are finding if you want to synchronize brains, you start telling a story. And we suddenly have this shared experience of story. No wonder Neil Gaiman says, and a lot of people do, stories should change us. I mean, when we hear a story, it's affecting our brain in a sense of though we almost experienced it. And so there's something really deep going on here with these stories and these patterns of what make good stories. Okay, but it keeps going, of course. Desjardins, who I've quoted very often, Jesuit, I don't know what he was. I don't even know how to describe him. Just an amazing, genius, smart man. Science, theology, religion, spirituality, definitely called a heretic. Good sign. Here's what he says. We're reading his book in book club. Creation, fall, incarnation, redemption. Again, a pattern. Those vast universal events no longer appear as fleeting accidents occurring sporadically in time. A grossly immature view, which is a perpetual offense to our reason and a contradiction of our experience. This guy's language. All four of those events become coextensive with the duration and totality of the world. They are, in some way, aspects, distinct in reality but physically linked, of one and the same divine operation. The incarnation of the Word, which is in process of continual and universal consummation, is simply the final term of a creation which is still continuing everywhere and does so through our imperfections, and then some Latin, which means the world is groaning, which is kind of a different take on that passage. But basically this, creation, fall, incarnation, redemption, again, these themes of story that he says are everywhere in the universe. This is happening all the time, and it has been happening since the beginning of the universe, and it will continue to happen. Which again, if you put different words on these, it's that same idea of things are a certain way, and then they fall, and then they become a different way, and then we just keep in this idea of story. And it keeps going. Jeremy Begbie was a Duke PhD who came to Whitworth, and I got to listen to him, I don't even know, a few months ago. An amazing pianist, an amazing thinker on art and religion. And he started talking about music and art in general. But music has the same pattern, a resolution of dissonance. Or we begin at a place with music and we establish a home, which is our verse, and then we kind of leave that, or the chorus is generally maybe more of a home, a lot of songs. He was playing a ton of songs on the piano and recordings, and you start to see this pattern of you are home, and then you leave, and there's dissonance, and whoa, and then the chorus comes back, home again, yes. And you've all experienced this listening to music, that part of the song where you're just kind of, oh, yeah, here we go. Whew, yes, I'm back home. This is the part, and this is what makes a good song. So again, this pattern, I mean, this pattern's everywhere in different kinds of language. And you could argue this pattern is in good stories, it's in our lives, it's in the universe, it's in music, it's everywhere. And we could talk a lot about it, or I could just show you a clip from a movie, which my son's been begging me to show a clip of Lord of the Rings for years. So you know I'm going L-O-T-R here. A little clip from Lord of the Rings, which I know Lord of the Rings maybe isn't your movie, but again, just this clip, the music, the story, the speech. Right? Now, some of you are like, what? Really, that movie's so weird. Okay, but those of you who are not, you got a little bit like, oh, man, Sam. Dude, I love Sam. He's so good. Sam, you're so sweet. And Sam, yes, that's right. Some story, some good is worth fighting for. We don't know the end of the stories, but we have this dark moment, and then where the darkness eventually leaves and things are better, and characters, protagonists, they have this opportunity to choose to fight. And we can fight, right? Now, if it's not Lord of the Rings, you all have your movie, your TV show, your book, your story where this happens. You're reading it, watching it, listening to it, and you just get this thing of like, yes, yes, I can do this. And we all know how every story plays out. Oh, yeah, it starts this way. Oh, boy, here they are. All the bad guys are coming. Are they going to die? No, they're not going to die. They never die. They didn't die. Yes. Oh, my gosh. And why does this matter? Why does this matter? Why do these stories affect us so much? I mean, do you ever just step back and think, why is the universe filled with this kind of stuff? Why are we moved by it? And one thing with these stories is we don't ask, is that real? I mean, did Sam really say that? Are there really hobbits in Middle Earth? Because I don't know. I don't believe that there's little people like that who are fighting dragons and golems. I mean, I just don't buy it. I don't think it's real. No, of course we don't ask that. Because it doesn't matter. Because the story affects us. And so we often use words like myth on stories that move us and stories that inspire us with the story in our own lives. And in using the word myth, we often think, well, that's a very negative connotation. And someone to say the Bible is myth would be like, whoa, 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 step back. And yet, the Bible is more real and more true than just taking it at its literal sense, in my opinion. In fact, Richard Rohr says taking a story at its literal sense is the lowest level you can take any story. There's always something more inspiring about a story. So all of this combined brings us to Joseph Campbell. And Joseph Campbell was a mythologist, a speaker, a writer, and Joseph Campbell coined this phrase, the hero's journey. And the hero's journey has been used basically in every movie. We have a New Year's tradition where we watch movies all day on New Year's Day. Every single movie has the hero's journey. Every single story basically has some form of the hero's journey. In fact, George Lucas with Star Wars has said in numerous interviews that he basically just took the hero's journey and copied it into a science fiction world. And that didn't work really well. Okay, so what does Joseph Campbell say about the hero's journey? The basic story of the hero's journey involves giving up where you are, going into the realm of adventure, coming to some kind of symbolically rendered realization, and then returning to the field of normal life. So in other language, it's you're in the village, you feel the summons to go somewhere else, you go somewhere else, you're in the wilderness or the woods where you fight all the bad guys and things are really bad, or the dip. And then in that area, you receive the gift, which is the force, the lightsaber, the shield, the sword, whatever it is. And then with this gift and this newfound power, you return home, but different than you were, different than you started. And this is basically a crude summary of the hero's journey. The summons, the wilderness, the gift, the return. And he also says this, mythology is not a lie. Mythology is poetry. It is metaphorical. It has been well said that mythology is the penultimate truth. Penultimate because the ultimate cannot be put into words. Oof, okay? So, we start to get somewhere, right? We got to the story, this myth. And again, I would say the Bible is myth. Does that mean I would say it didn't literally happen? No. But I would say it's myth in the way that it inspires us to these something bigger than words on this hero's journey. And to come back to my drone story, if you'll allow me, the summons. I was called out that night to fly the drone, and I don't know why. I look back on it, and what was I thinking? It was dark. I'd never flown the drone at night, and yet I can see myself there in the driveway just almost in a trance watching my drone go higher and higher. There was something calling me. And then the dip happened, of course. The reality was altered. Grief, my drone fell into the wilderness, into the woods. And so I had to tromp through the wilderness, wondering if I would ever find it again in this snowy, cold night with the snow going into my boots, wondering if I was dressed properly to find my drone and to recover it. Things were looking very, very down. And yet, then zzz, zzz, I heard it. Zzz, zzz. And I saw the blinking lights. Zzz, zzz. How am I going to get there? Okay, Ryan, you've got to go to the door. You've got to fight your dragons. Okay? There will be help. Help always comes. But you've got to fight. You have a choice, as Sam said, as all characters do. Which path are you going to choose? I go to the door. I flew a drone onto your roof. Help me. Hey, let me help you. And the gift, what a gift. I met my neighbor. An amazing man, amazing family, all kinds of things I didn't know about him. An amazing Jeep I might get to ride in someday. This was the gift that I had been hoping for in the wilderness. I was able to find my drone. And where did I go? I returned home, of course, but not the same Ryan who had left. I returned home a different hero. I now know my neighbor. My neighbor and I are friends. And I've brought my neighbor's relationship into my home. And we will have a barbecue this summer with my neighbor. Okay, this is the story. It's a dang good story. Follows the hero's journey exactly, right? Okay, yeah. So we're all living these stories, right? On large scales, on small scales, on maybe in the course of 30-minute scale, in the course of a lifetime scale. What does any of this have to do with anything, especially in church? Here's the deal. The Old Testament is filled with some words repeated very often. Remember when you were slaves in Egypt. Remember when you were slaves in Egypt. Remember when, remember when, remember when, remember when. Over and over and over and over. God speaks through the prophets. Remember a story. In fact, the Old Testament, the Hebrew Bible, could be summarized, remember a story. And what's the story? Well, you were in a certain place, and you were making bricks, and you felt a summons, a call to go somewhere else. There was something better. And so you left that place, and you went out into the wilderness. And you're wandering in this desert for a long time, and things look really, really bad and terrible, and you're complaining, and you want to go back. But you can't go back because there's something that needs to happen there. And things do happen there, and then you find this new promised land, this gift for actually an entire tribe or nation of people. And then when you return home, somewhat symbolically, but you return different because you've been in certain places in life, and you need to remember those places you've been as you then continue to build a nation and tribe of your own. So remember the story, remember the story, remember the story, remember the story. And we're going to talk about that story as we get into it in the four phases because they're all there. We can learn a lot from that story. And then you get to the New Testament and Jesus says, remember me. In fact, maybe the greatest ritual, symbolic act that we do as Christians is communion, Eucharist. Remember me. It's all about remembering me. Is it just remember Jesus? Oh, yeah, remember Jesus existed. No, remember the story. Remember the story of me. Remember what happened with me. And there's, again, all of these pieces of summons, of wilderness, of gifts / resurrection, of returning home. Again, all of these elements in these stories. And there is huge power in remembering the stories. Remember these stories because these stories affect you. You are living these stories. Your life is this story. Again, in small sections and in big sections. In fact, you could even say this entire life of ours on earth is the wilderness. And we need to receive something to return home with something different. You could say that. I mean, I don't know. We could have a fun conversation about it, right? So even maybe our entire life is a part of this story. And so again, for today, maybe we can end here. Some of you are feeling called to something. And man, this can take so many variations. Called to a new place, called to a new job, called to a new way of thinking, called to a new perspective, called to go visit my neighbor, called to, I mean, it just goes on and on. You're feeling this summons, you could say. And to leave home and the way things are, nice and tidy and simple, and it's comfortable here, no, I'm resisting it. And so maybe some of you are going to need to hear, like, no, you know what, I got to go there. I've got to go do that thing. I've got to take the step away from home. Now, some of you I know for a fact are in the wilderness, the desert, the dip, whatever you want to call it, the disturbance, when things are not going well. And for so many of us, we were raised with a story that says, well, when you're in the desert, man, everything's bad in life. That's when you've screwed up, something screwed up, God's left you. I mean, that's a bad place to be, and you got to get out of there as fast as possible, because no one should be in the dip. And yet, every good story has a dip. Every good story has the wilderness. And some of you just need to hear, it's okay. It's okay. You're in the desert. Maybe the desert isn't as bad as you think when you start becoming aware of different ideas. And maybe when you start realizing that the entire universe has this fall component to it, this grief component to it, then suddenly the desert becomes not a place to get out of as fast as possible, but maybe a place to hang out in and to learn what you can and to be okay with it and at ease with it and have some patience and to open your eyes to where God is in it. Because in that dip, in that wilderness, is where we receive the gift. And the gift can mean all kinds of things, obviously, depending on the story, but the gift is this good peace, this good way of learning, this different perspective, this new relationship, this profound insight into something, maybe something very tangible, a new job, a new whatever. But it's often in the wilderness. And so maybe some of us need to learn how to look for this gift and to see what gifts we already have. And then leading to the fourth one, which I think is really important, a lot of us receive the gift. We receive this, the force, the sword, the lightsaber, the gun, the whatever. And then we're really comfortable just staring at it all day and thinking how awesome we are with our new sword. This thing's so sweet. Look at me. I'm awesome. No, no, no. Every time you get the gift out of the wilderness, you've got to return home because the world needs you. And the world needs what you've learned, what you've been inspired by, and your new perspective, your new relationship, your new whatever. We need to hear the story because we're all living our stories of our own. And this is how we grow. This is how the universe grows. This is the pattern of the universe. I mean, arguably. And the Bible speaks to this story in our lives. And as we go through these components, I think all of us, I know all of us, will relate to each component at different phases of different stories in our lives. And I think at the end of the day, we realize something beautiful. God is in all of them. God is moving us. And this story of our life and our life in this world matters a ton. And it's inspiring, it's empowering, it's creative, it's comforting, it's good stuff. One last piece. Alexander Shia has taken all of this and put it onto the Gospels. Now you can, maybe he stretches it here and there, but he would say the Gospels, Matthew talks about the summons, Mark talks about the wilderness, John talks about the gift, and Luke talks about returning home with the gift and then putting this thing into action, which we'll also get into, and it's all really cool stuff. But for today, maybe just leave with this. Wherever you're at in this story, wherever your life is at, it's all right. It's okay. It's part of a story, and maybe if you start looking at it a little bit differently, you'll be at a little more peace with it and maybe find God in it. And as we get into these details of them coming up, I think we'll find even more insight and inspiration. I think it's going to be cool. Let's pray. God, thanks for a new year and a new chance to reflect on our lives, on the world, on where we're at, on what story, if we want to put that language on it, we're living. And there's a reason you communicate to us through stories. There's a reason the Bible is filled with stories. There's a reason Jesus came and told stories. There's a reason we are supposed to remember the stories. To be inspired by them to live our own. So help us in this series that's maybe at first glance a little different, to learn how to live better with you in this world, to love you more, to accept your love of us more, and to love others more. We are grateful for this place, for your love, for the story we get to live, and for this day. Thank you for being an awesome God. Amen. Have an amazing first week of 2016. Go in grace and peace.